Hi, welcome. Amy Leach and myself today are joined by a special guest, Jonathan Naylor, who is a partner in our national employment team, heads up the Thames Valley office, is an ex-barrister, and specialises in dealing with trade unions. So hi, Jonathan.
Afternoon to you both.
The topic today, I've given it away a little bit in Jonathan's introduction, is trade union communication strategies. A topic that's close to my heart, having acted for UK Coal and dealt with the various mining trade unions over the years, and having various conversations, communications, run-ins, however you want to describe it. But what we're going to look at is how to conquer the communication battle without overstepping the mark, and to then look to provide our listeners with some tips, some insights, and how to do this for your business. But before we do that, Jonathan, any guest we have on the ShoeSpeak HR podcast is asked, aside from ours, what their favourite podcast is to listen to. So there we have it. First question.
Okay, first question. I'm on the spot already. Thank you so much for the introduction, which was fulsome and very welcome. Thank you very much. Yes, the podcast, I obviously, number one is the ShoeSpeak one without any question. But if you weren't able to listen to that, then I would say, well, there's some really good ones on BBC Sounds at the moment. I have to say, I really enjoyed the Lazarus heist in passing. I'll just throw that one in there, which is about how North Korea and the state are actually trying to train people up in order to attack Western governments' IT systems and bank systems across the world. Fascinating stuff. But the one that's really caught my attention very recently, and as if cricket doesn't have enough recent problems, there's a reminder of some historic problems that it had with a chap called Alan Sanford, Stanford, sorry, I should say, who once put up a £20 million bounty essentially for one cricket game. Turned out to be entirely funded essentially by a Ponzi scheme. Extraordinary stuff, really interesting podcast. And one little snippet I'll just give you, when money is so out of proportion to reality, as it was in his case, you end up doing things like his dry cleaning was flown from a Caribbean island to Miami in order to be done because he didn't like the way it was done on a Caribbean island. So it then had to be flown back to him after being dry cleaned in Miami. Pretty extraordinary stuff. Definitely worth a listen.
It sounds it very much so. So I guess moving on to the substantive topic of today, Jonathan, what is the first thing you would look at when considering communication with a trade union?
So I think, as with any relationship, the first question is the parties involved in that relationship. Have you got the right people in the right place at the right time? Now, obviously, as an employer, you're limited in what you can do, perhaps with some of the representatives themselves. Then that's not fully in your control, although you might be able to identify some that are particularly pragmatic, particularly helpful, and you can then essentially, you know, mount a love campaign with them to try and ensure that they're on your side, they're getting your message, and perhaps they're working a little bit with their colleagues, the other representatives, to try and get your points across and get that element of reasonableness in there. So that's one element. I think the other side is your own, and that is in your direct control. Who have you got as managers dealing with the reps? Are they the right people? Do the personalities just clash? Because if they do, you're not going to get a very productive relationship going. It's pretty obvious. So I think you look at both of those sides of the coin. You see if you've got the right people in place, and just see whether you've got something there that can be dealt with appropriately, and whether you need to make any changes, or indeed just structure how that communication channel works.
No, I agree. You know, kind of the clue's in the name, isn't it, in terms of communication and making sure that the individuals that are looking to communicate, you know, kind of are compatible. So, Amy Leach, what about, I'm calling you Amy Leach, just out of habit. Amy Anderson isn't here, Amy's so I could today. Just call you Amy. but what would you consider are, you know, the most effective communication channels?
Yeah, so I suppose it's considering alternative approaches, really, and the effective approach is going to, I think, vary depending on the topic that you're trying to sort of put forward or show in the information. So I think you could have things, it could be email, it could be newsletters, it might be face-to-face meetings, but then again, it might not, depending on the workforce. Obviously, we still have a level of COVID being around, so do you need to do things virtually still from a health and safety perspective? And again, it'd be considering the workforce. So how will the comms to the reps be passed on? So I think it's trying to make it easy for them. So putting the information in a format that they can just pass on to the workforce. It might be PowerPoint summaries. It might be bite-sized things to keep it simple rather than reams and reams of information. And again, I think it's being conscious of how is the workforce split. So are they all on one site? And if they are, that's probably going to make things a little bit easier with relaying information. But if they're on multiple sites, thinking about how you can portray a message or information consistently, you might want to avoid kind of whispers of different treatment among sites, but also I suppose that Chinese whispers type thing, making sure the message is the same across all of the sites. And again, with shift groups, if you've got people working different shifts at different times of the day, or they work different patterns each week, how do you make sure that everybody who is affected, everybody who needs to know that information gets the information and gets the same message? And I know, like, sort of sometimes you might consider having a script and it may come across quite formal or stilted, but actually that does ensure that the right message is communicated and that it is the same across all sites or all shifts. And I think open and transparency is quite key here. And I think it really will go a long way if you get that communication channel right for the right bit of information. Then the rest of it should hopefully be a lot more straightforward for you.
No, absolutely. Again, couldn't agree more. And I guess I think we've probably all learned during COVID is, you know, kind of, there is no one size fits all communication method.
Absolutely.
Lots of employees, you know, kind of, and reps will extend into that, but they effectively want it in different ways, whether that is, you know, by a recorded webinar, whether that is a live webinar, whether that's by email, whether that's, you know, kind of a monthly, a weekly update, a daily update. You know, there's all sorts of methods of communication, and those need to be analysed and obviously put in place to make sure that message is got across. And in terms of messaging as well, the other thing I would say is an organisation should probably consider whether the reps themselves need training. Because we all probably have a perception of what a trade union representative is, and that will extend to your workforce. And if somebody is stepping into this role, you know, as a first-time rep, or has just joined the organisation, or, you know, kind of is getting to know the organisation, it's better that, you know, kind of we, the business, make sure that those reps understand what it is that their role is, you know, so they have confidence about fulfilling that role. You know, so it may be something that's the business, it is worth investing to upskill those individuals. I guess the potential risk in that regard is, will the training, if it's done by the company to the reps, be perceived rather cynically as if this is just a method of trying to shape those reps into? So, you know, kind of, you will have to, you know, look at the TU reps, look at the, you know, the trade union itself, and get an understanding of where they're coming from. But if that is likely to be a problem, then it may be that you go out to an external organisation. I know, for example, Shoesmiths and Jonathan have done lots of these training sessions, and it's equally something that ACAS can offer. You know, so that may kind of get the TU reps on board and demonstrate, you know, that here is an organisation that is acting in good faith and is willing to invest and develop those TU reps. So certainly something worth considering. And again, it's that planning in advance. And I guess moving to you, Jonathan, in terms of planning for those difficult conversations, how would you say that is best done?
Yes, well, just to pick up on your point there, Andy, I think whilst that there might be some cynicism about reps that, you know, they're getting the company lawyers in to train us, the reality is in certain circumstances, that the reps actively welcome that simply because they appreciate they're going to go into a really difficult situation, maybe a collective redundancy consultation. And if they don't have the tools to deal with that, they're grateful to take that guidance and support, even if it comes from people who they might perceive as not being entirely independent. But as you say, if they do have that strong perception, there are independent suppliers out there that you can go to as well. So you can get over that problem. But when you are in those difficult scenarios where there is a tough situation, like perhaps collective redundancy or substantial changes to contract of employment for a mass grouping, then I think the biggest thing for the employer is just that pre-planning. You've got to start, I call it a route map of where you want to get to with any big project like that. And you have to spend some time planning. It can't be done at the last minute, and it has to be thorough and detailed. And really what I think has been most beneficial in the circumstances where I've advised clients on this is where you almost go through each potential stage of the process and say, well, if this happens, this is a potential response to that from the trade union. Then what are we going to do? How are we then going to respond to that in kind? Where do we take it from there? And therefore, you've almost got this plan, a scheme of where things would go at each stage. You'll have an option. And to give you an example of that, work with a big multi-site client that has a very strong union presence. And they would often have the union do consultative ballots. So they would say, okay, it's not the formal process. They haven't gone through the appropriate legislative procedure to have a proper binding ballot. But what they do is they give it to the union, to the members, and say, right, tell us what you think about this. And of course, if it strengthens their hand in the negotiation, if they can come back and say, well, 98% of our members think this is a terrible idea, and they're considering industrial action over it. So it tends to be used as a tactic. So of course, we then sat with the employer and said, okay, this is the proposal. What's going to be the reaction? What's going to be the response? If it's something of that sort, for example, they go to a consultative ballot, what will you do in response? What communications will you put out? How will you deal with that? And essentially, we will just plot out each phase of that process. And that puts the employer in just a fantastic position to then start the project off knowing really you can't guarantee every eventuality, but you can almost suggest, right, we've got a real plan here for whatever happens, we can then react to it. And we're not reacting on the hoof. We've actually planned this out. We know what we're going to say. We're going to then affect that particular part of the process. So it really helps.
No, I agree. And I guess to some extent, Amy, that as part of that, kind of that plan, you may also have to pick your battles.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think in some cases you may find that the trade union reps are quite sort of inclined to make a full-time job almost out of the role. And they might come to you with their long list of alleged sort of issues and violations of policies. And it's kind of deciding actually, is that a fight you want or need to have in the context? So obviously, if there's any grievances that are raised by employees, they'll need to be dealt with properly. But again, it's just being aware of encouraging that open door policy with TU reps. So those who are just in it for a fight, it's probably not worth doing that if it's sort of something that actually I suppose isn't legally required, isn't under any agreement with the union. It's probably sort of best just to politely try and draw a line under an issue that doesn't kind of fall under one of those categories. And again, the union, you may find that they send out communications to the workforce that are actually unhelpful or might try and actually portray the employer as being unfair. And again, it's just trying to kind of pick your battles and not necessarily be drawn into every single debate and every single challenge, and maybe only just challenge the comms which are incorrect or do affect something that's ongoing at the moment. And I think an important kind of message here would be for managers and for them not to take things to heart where possible as well, which I can imagine is probably easier said than done in some occasions. And just ensure that, I think, from a manager perspective, that their feelings don't interfere with a professional approach and just trying to look at things factually and fairly and reasonably in each situation.
Couldn't agree more, Amy. It is a case of picking your battles. But I guess sometimes that there is a genuine battle to be picked. And that comes when trade unions are acting as blockers to communication. Now there is obviously a bar on inducement. You must be careful not to undermine whatever is in the collective bargaining arrangements. But that doesn't preclude absolutely all methods of direct communication to members of the union. And the Supreme Court has provided helpful guidance on the very recently decided Costal case. The upshot of that decision, and it's been a bit of a rocky road, kind of employee favoured, employer favoured, and kind of where we've landed is a good spot, because the decision is that employers can make direct offers to workers in respect of something which falls within the scope of collective bargaining, provided that it has followed and exhausted the agreed collective bargaining procedure. So I think the practical takeaway from that recent decision has to be that employers should take a look at their bargaining arrangements, procedures that they have in place, and make sure that it sets out how the employer will negotiate, how the consultation with the union will happen, the various stages, any escalations, and then what is considered to be the end, so that, you know, everybody's clear, we have exhausted this process, we can't take it any further. You know, so if that isn't in the current agreement, then now is the time to be reviewing that. And it's absolutely a reasonable approach to take given the recent Supreme Court decision. You know, so that's something that organizations should look to, so that they can, you know, where they find that communication is being blocked and that's unreasonable. And the process has been followed properly, they can go out with the direct communication. So there we made that sound easy, guys, I guess. I don't know why we end up with all this industrial action and strikes. So I say firmly, tongue in cheek, we completely understand the issues that are encountered when dealing with trade unions. So what would we take away as our top tips, I guess? Amy Leach, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I think just to reiterate the last point I made, so about picking your battles, really. So don't get hung up, if you can, on something that actually doesn't cause an issue legally or otherwise. Just stick with the battles that you really do need to fight. And that should hopefully make things a little bit more straightforward.
Yeah, and I think mine is, I've got two. I'm only allowed to give one, but I'm going to give two anyway. One is to train the reps, but you may decide that that's already been done or not needed. So if that's not the case, then my other top tip would be, you know, to review those procedures and to make sure that you have it, the procedure set out, so everybody knows. Jonathan?
Well, since you've gone for two, Andy, I'm gonna do that as well. So, firstly, just looking back to what you said about the Costal case, which, you know, of course, really important Supreme Court authority. So, you know, relevant very much to employers. But we can go so far with that and then no further. If the employer wants to be very cautious, rather than actually going as far as offering things, what they could do is just provide the same information that they're giving to the union reps as well, just to kind of appeal over the heads of the union reps. Sure, it'll upset the union, but as long as they're clear it's not a formal offer, and it's just repeating what they're making in terms of the communications to the reps, that might help sway a few of the members if you feel that the union is being a communications blocker. So that's a kind of even more cautious step below the Costal threshold, so that, you know, that helps too. And my final point is just the route map. I think, you know, be clear about your strategy right at the start before you engage. That way you won't be making it up on the hoof. You'll have a nice clear plan and process in place that'll help you react in what are very difficult, stressful situations, sometimes happening very quickly, and you won't want to have to be making it up. You'll want to know what you're going to do next, and that pre-planning will have enabled you to do that.
Thank you, Jonathan, for that and for joining us. Very much appreciated. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. To the extent that you have any queries, you know, as per normal, feel free to get in touch. shoespeakhr@shoesmiths.co.uk, and we'll be able to, you know, direct you to Jonathan or to any one of us to discuss any issues you have. So, like I say, thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thanks, both.
Thank you.